What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Defocus Media podcast. You know, there's a topic that we are super fascinated by here at Defocus, and I know a lot of you are as well out there, and that's the epidemic of myopia that's happening within the world. Rates of myopia worldwide are skyrocketing. The World Health Organization considers it an epidemic now. In the United States, we're seeing a huge increase in myopia as our lifestyles change. That's really kind of past even what genetics alone can explain. Well, we decided now more than ever is a good time to be talking about this conversation because as optometrists, we're really leaving the front lines of treating and controlling this epidemic. So we brought on an expert guest. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Brett O'Connor.
Hey there. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dr. O'Connor, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in optometry.
Yeah, so I practice in Jacksonville, Florida. I am a 2016 graduate from Southern College of Optometry. I joined private practice here in North Florida after graduation. We're really primary care optometry. We see patients of all ages and stages. And I guess my sort of role in that practice as not only the associate, but as the new member on the team was to bring something new into the practice. And I knew from a very early point that myopia was something that I really wanted to address and handle very strategically in our practice because, you know, I think we oftentimes hear, oh, vision therapy, optometry should own that. Or, oh, scleral contact lenses or glaucoma, optometry should own that. Well, myopia is something that optometry already does own, but I don't know that we are always managing it as effectively as we could. So that's my goal and my emphasis of practice in our office.
I find that so fascinating because we oftentimes will talk to, you know, what we consider young ODs on the podcast, but you really are a new graduate, but already really owning the space. So talk to me a little bit about how you approached that interview process when, you know, you were applying to be an associate doctor with Pull and Eye. Did you know already that myopia control was the niche that you wanted to bring to them, or how did you come upon that?
Yeah, you know, I did. So as I was, you know, going through school, you know, you're always just so overwhelmed with studying and learning all the topics that you have. But more towards fourth year, as I was thinking about, you know, what I wanted to do, where I wanted to practice, and I knew I wanted to go into private practice. And from doctors that I had spoken with, I knew it was very important to bring something to private practice. You know, I think it's important to remember as someone who's potentially going to be joining on as an associate that it is sort of, it's a big deal for the optometrist who's going to hire you as well, because there's a lot that goes into bringing someone new onto the team. So they want to know that you are going to bring something unique to their practice. So I thought about scleral contact lenses during school. The practice that I ultimately joined is already fitting a lot of specialty contact lenses in that modality. I thought about vision therapy. It's really not something that I was necessarily called to do. It's not something that I have a lot of passion for in the way that our practice is set up. That's generally at this point in time, something that actually gets referred out. And I sort of, you know, came back to myopia. It was something that was introduced maybe during first or second year. And I just always sort of thought we have a way to slow this process down. Well, why do we have patients that are at -7, -8, -10, like my mom? I kind of thought about it. And as I was interviewing, I sort of broached that topic with each of the owner optometrists that I spoke with. And there was a lot of good reception. I think that there's a lot of people out there who know that we could and should be managing myopia, but maybe just don't know how to do it. So as I brought that up with Dr. Pullen, who owns our practice, he was very, very supportive, and it's really worked out pretty well for us.
Well, since we're talking about getting to know the basics and feeling comfortable, why don't you give our audience a breakdown of how do you start a myopia control specialty?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing that you need to do anytime you're bringing a new specialty into the office, even though myopia is something that we all understand, obviously, intuitively at this point, I think anytime you're bringing something new into your office, you need to do a little bit of research. And that doesn't mean that you need to spend weeks or months poring over randomized controlled trials, but I think that you should familiarize yourself with a couple of sort of key considerations. So number one, what is the prevalence of myopia? What are some of the comorbidities of high myopia? These are things that we need to be able to discuss comfortably with our patients. And we need to have some sort of evidence base as we're discussing this. You want to know the development and the progression of myopia. So we don't necessarily have all of the answers on which factors actually cause the eye to elongate, but it's important to have an understanding of that. And then you need to educate yourself on all the different treatment modalities. There are many, many things from undercorrection to alignment fit gas permeable contact lenses to orthokeratology to pharmacological methods that we've experimented with over time. And not all of them work. So the nice thing is that nowadays we've got a lot of great meta-analyses, which we know are sort of conglomerations of well-designed studies that tell us which treatments work and which treatments don't. So I think those are all sort of important things to get a grasp on. And once you feel that you understand those things, you need to make a decision on which treatment modalities you're going to offer in your practice. So we'll talk a little bit, I think a little later on in the podcast, about the different mechanisms and methods that we have to address progressive myopia. But that doesn't mean that you have to offer them all. We're going to talk about orthokeratology. If you say that's just something that I really don't see us incorporating in our practice, no one's going to force you to fit orthokeratology. No one says you have to be all things to all people. But I think you should, before you incorporate a myopia management subclinic, you should have a very clear idea of what treatment modalities you want to offer and how you want to structure them. So do you want to have a separate consultation visit where you talk to patients and parents and decide which treatment modality to pursue? Do you want to have a discussion in the exam room at the time of the comprehensive exam and try to maximize your efficiency in that way? And then how many visits do you want to have them back for? So do you want to follow up every 3 months, every 6 months? If you structure everything before you get started, you'll be a lot more comfortable as you're kind of getting into the process. If you just jump in without really thinking things through beforehand, it's not that it won't work. You're just going to have a lot more bumps in the road, and it's going to make it a little bit more difficult to have a smooth flow in your myopia management subclinic.
It sounds like you need to have a clear package. Like, this is the myopia control package for our office. It covers this many follow-up visits. It costs this much money. And that's something that needs to be reviewed up front. So that way patients aren't coming in a 3 month follow-up and expecting like a no charge sort of exam. Like, there needs to be some clear structure to fees up front.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're going to be following up with these patients more than once a year. And, you know, there's certainly multiple ways to go about it. I would recommend, rather than charging at each visit, again, having some sort of fee that is all inclusive. And that doesn't mean the patient pays one fee that includes their exam, their refraction, their materials, all of their visits. But at least for the different visits you're going to have them back for, say for the treatment modality you choose, you're going to need to have them back at 1 week, 1 month, and 6 months. Rather than giving the patient and the family the feeling of sort of being nickeled and dimed and never knowing how much they're going to be spending, if you can have that discussion up front, say, this is our myopia management fee, this is what you pay today, and that prepays any visits related to myopia that we'll need to have you back for throughout the year. With the caveat, I'll say that depending on what options you're offering, you may not have the same fee for all of those options. For example, your fee for orthokeratology may need to be higher than your fee for managing a patient with low-dose atropine, just based on the number of visits and the level of expertise that's going to be required for managing that patient.
Absolutely. Speaking as a practitioner that offers both, obviously it's a huge difference in the amount of times you're going to be seeing the patient. Well, let's talk a little bit about the options. So you mentioned kind of earlier in your conversation, we know things that don't work all that well and things that do seem to work much better. Let's talk first about what the studies have shown really aren't effective treatments. And I think that includes undercorrection and just traditionally fit RGPs. Let me get your opinion on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a great meta-analysis of 16 different interventions for progressive myopia, and they sort of classified each of those in a unique way. They separated out refractive change and axial elongation, and for each intervention, said whether there was a strong, medium, or low effect. So a strong effect at reducing the progression of myopic prescription, but maybe a weak effect at slowing axial elongation. So you can kind of look at each option. And there were several, the prime most common ones used, several options that were found to be ineffective, the most common ones being under correction and alignment fit gas permeable lenses. And oftentimes with these methods that were unsuccessful, there were some early studies before we had all this large evidence base that suggested there may be some treatment effect. But we've kind of discovered over time with better design studies that there really isn't a treatment effect with undercorrection and gas permeable contact lenses. There's also some studies that have looked at modification of risk factors. So we may talk a bit about time spent outdoors and near work. And the overall conclusion is that simply modifying lifestyle factors such as those is not in and of itself an effective monotherapy for slowing myopia progression. There's a couple of other scattered treatments that most folks maybe have not heard of, including IOP lowering agents, timolol, which generally speaking that has been found to be ineffective, and even a systemic medication called methylxanthin, an oral medication that a 3-year randomized study found no myopia control effect with. So they also discussed a little bit about spectacle lens interventions, and those results have kind of been, generally speaking, more in what they classified as the low effect category. So we're talking progressive lenses, bifocal lenses, although I will say there was a recent study that came out that actually had some promise with what's called prismatic bifocal lenses that actually incorporated some base in prism into the segment.
Interesting. I need to read that article. I had kind of given up hope on spectacle correction potentially as a myopia control option, but it's good to hear that maybe there's some things we haven't thought of yet.
That's right. Yeah. And I oftentimes will combine, if I'm going to do atropine only, which we'll talk about, I will usually combine that with some sort of optical intervention. If we're going to be doing glasses, either bifocal or progressive or some sort of intervention there. But yeah, that study that I mentioned found about a 50% slowing over 3 years with the prismatic bifocals, and I believe about a 30 to 40% slowing with regular bifocal lenses. Pretty well-designed study, and I think we'd all agree that those are clinically meaningful results.
Well, let's talk about the options that do work. I know in our own practice, we offer myopia control, and the three options that we offer to patients are low-dose atropine, orthokeratology, and a soft multifocal distant center contact lens. What are you offering in your clinic, and are those the same options, or do you offer something different?
That's exactly right. So we offer three options as well. So technically there's four. As Jeff Walling says, the first option is doing nothing, and we're not going to do that. The first option that we offer, and what I'd say is probably for most patients the most intuitive option, is soft distant center multifocal contact lenses. And I think that's probably for many of our patients and families the most intuitive option of the three that we offer. So what we're going for here is clear distance vision, which is funneled through a central area in that lens that in most designs is relatively spherical. So think of a single vision lens out to a certain distance in the middle of that lens. And then whether it's a concentric or an extended depth of focus or a zonal design, in some way we are inducing relative plus power in the periphery of that lens. Our working theory of myopia progression is that peripheral hyperopia, so light focusing behind the retina and the periphery, somehow stimulates axial elongation. So by inducing plus power in the periphery and thus either peripheral emmetropia or myopia, the thought is that's what is reducing the myopia progression. So in our practice, we use a daily disposable lens. So when it comes to children, regardless of what type of lens we're fitting, we fit daily disposable lenses because we know there's about a 13 to 14 times reduced risk of corneal inflammatory events. So fortunately now we do have daily disposable multifocals, which are distance center available. I'll just make a note that some doctors do recommend using any multifocal lens, so center near as well. And we kind of call that 80 plus is good plus. And there is some evidence that supports that. I will say not nearly as much as the evidence that supports distance center multifocal lenses. And that's really more in line with the model that we have for progressive myopia. So we exclusively fit distance center multifocal lenses on those patients.
I want to get your opinion on this because sometimes it does happen in my clinic. We're gung-ho. We really want to do myopia control. Soft multifocals is the easiest, I agree with you, to try to get patients comfortable in. And then I'll have patients that just the distance blur is more than they can bear. Do you find that that happens in a high percentage of your patients, or is there a certain age of child where that's more of an issue than others? I just want to get your insight into that issue.
I really haven't found that to be a significant problem. And that doesn't mean that children don't notice the blur, but I think with the proper patient selection, it's a little bit more uncommon. So I'd say for me, the kids who are going to be least likely to complain of distance vision being blurry are going to be younger kids. So 8, 9, 10-year-olds, kids who have not worn any type of contact lens before. So if you imagine, think of a kid that comes in, they're minus 2 last year, they come in, now they're 20/40, they're minus 275. You fit them in that multifocal, even if their distance vision looks a little bit different, they're still going to be seeing a lot better than they were seeing in their glasses. And they also don't have anything to compare it to. They weren't wearing a spherical lens for, you know, 2 or 3 years before. So if there's the motivation and they haven't worn contact lenses before, that's a very high percentage fit. Now, a couple of things decrease the likelihood of success. I'd say the older the kid's age, the less the change in prescription between exams, and then the longer, if they have been wearing spherical contact lenses, the longer they've been wearing spherical contact lenses, the more likely you are to have that distance vision complaint. The other thing is, depending on the lens design, you know, we've got 4 or 5 commercially available designs. And of course, it's kind of silly to generalize vision or efficacy to all of those designs because they're all different. So depending on the lens that you're using, you may have more or less success in terms of visual outcomes.
So that's also good to know, because sometimes I think it's tempting when we were like, okay, this is my go-to lens for myopia control, off-label, of course, because there's no FDA-approved lens to do this. That's a soft multifocal. It's kind of like, for me, if I have a patient that's like, oh, it's too blurry, I'm not going to be able to live with this, it's like, okay, let's do something else altogether. But it might be worth exploring, okay, let's try a different lens option for you to see if maybe we can still make this work. Thank you for that advice. I'm going to double down.
Another thing I'd mention is it's always okay to add minus a quarter or minus 50, even if they don't need it for improved clarity. Subjectively, that will oftentimes help these kids. And it's easy to think, well, oh, isn't that going to reduce the amount of myopia that we induce in the periphery? Maybe, but it's still going to be much better than doing nothing. And if you're using a 250 add, or if you're using a newer extended depth of focus lens, which does not have an add power, has a universal near vision built in, you may be able to add that minus a quarter without affecting the distance myopia at all. And that usually does improve distance clarity for these patients.
Well, I know, you know, even we'd have to have an entire podcast about orthokeratology to give it true justice. So I just want to kind of touch on it more briefly as a way to do myopia control. In your personal opinion, do you find it to be more effective than soft multifocals, equally effective? How do you present it to patients as an option?
Yeah, so in terms of its efficacy, I think if we look at the well-controlled trials that are published, it's fairly similar to most multifocal lens trials that have been carried out in terms of efficacy, usually somewhere around 50%. It's important, just like with distance center multifocals, it's important to remember with orthokeratology that depending on the lens design used, depending on the patient's ocular anatomy and other factors, your efficacy could be different. So we're sort of learning more and more that just fitting anybody in orthokeratology isn't necessarily going to have the same level of efficacy. So for example, a patient with a very small pupil and a pretty low prescription, well, they may have less slowing of myopia than someone with a larger prescription, where we're inducing more change on that mid-peripheral cornea, and a larger pupil where we've got more room for that peripheral myopia to get through and back to the peripheral retina. So I think that's an important consideration. That doesn't mean that someone with a small pupil is not a candidate for orthokeratology, especially someone who's progressing in myopia. But I think it's always important to remember those things, especially if you get 6 months or a year down the road and you didn't have the level of myopia control that you had hoped for, you might want to look at some of those factors.
And then the third option, atropine. When are you deciding that's the option that you want to go with? And when you do make that choice, what percentage strength are you using?
In our practice, low-dose atropine is generally reserved for patients who either are not candidates for any type of contact lens wear, or have no interest in contact lens wear, or have high astigmatism and are also progressive myopes, because we know high astigmatism is a contraindication for orthokeratology. And with our distance center multifocals, trying to correct the astigmatism with that can be difficult to mask. So we reserve those treatments for those patients. And when we say low dose atropine, we're discussing 0.01% atropine. The studies to look at here are called the ATOM studies. That stands for atropine and the treatment of childhood myopia. Those are a series of studies where they evaluated different strengths of atropine. And the long story short was, the stronger the dose of atropine, up to 1%, which is what we use for pharmacological dilation, the more effect while on the drop. But with all of these studies, and when I say effect, I'm talking about slowing of myopic progression. But all of these studies included a washout period where they had the kids stop taking the drops after 2 years, and they tracked over the next 12 months what happened. And they discovered this rebound effect, where myopia would progress faster during that 12 months than it was beforehand. Even with that rebound effect, it was still more advantageous to have treated with atropine than to have done nothing. But I think that's important to remember. So as they extrapolated all that data out over several different studies and several different concentrations of atropine, they found that the lowest doses of atropine, even though they didn't have the highest efficacy of slowing myopia progression during the 24 months of treatment, they had not only less side effects, but less rebound effect over that 12 months afterwards. So they actually had the most efficacy, which is great for us clinically, right? Because if they had, you know, discovered that 1% atropine was the most effective medication, well, that's very difficult to prescribe for someone, for a kid in clinical practice. But 0.01% atropine has very rarely given significant side effects to children. Now, the studies did say that there is a measurable increase in pupil size and a measurable loss of accommodation with any dose, but it was not subjectively noted in the lower concentrations.
I've been having great success within my practice. Again, some patients just, they're no interest. And what I found is always a failure. If the kid does not want contact lenses, it is going to be brutal to try to do an INR. So if they're not on board with it and it's just mom that wants it, I kind of already say, okay, let's do atropine. And my low dose patients are doing great without side effects. I'm not getting them with severe light sensitivity. I put them in the anti-fatigue pair of glasses just as a precaution, but they, I'm not having anyone with headaches or trouble reading or difficulty. And I've been doing this for a couple of years now with great results. You know, it's not scary in any way as far as the patient's experience. But I think one thing I like to mention with atropine, we oftentimes think, well, like, oh, that's probably the most cost-effective thing for the patient too. Getting atropine pharmaceutically compounded, not cheap. It's costing a little over $100 for a 90-day supply for them. So when you think of it head to head with the cost, it's probably more expensive than orthokeratology at a certain point.
Our patients pay about $45 for a month supply. So even a little bit more than what y'all is, if that's a 90-day supply for y'all. So on top of the fact that they're also buying glasses, on top of the fact for your professional fees. So, it's definitely a misnomer that atropine is the most cost-effective option. And certainly from a practice management standpoint, which as an associate, you have to think about that, because the practice owner is, you know, has to track all of these factors. The patients are spending a lot of money, but they're spending it at the compounding pharmacy.
Right.
So you charge the professional fees that you need to charge. But from a practice management standpoint, atropine is going to help your patients a lot. It's not going to do much for your practice. One thing that I just want to mention as well about the anti-fatigue lens, which you mentioned, I think that's a great idea. And as I alluded to earlier, I usually will use some sort of progressive or bifocal or anti-fatigue lens with my patients on atropine. It's not so much for me that I'm worried that they're going to lose accommodation and need that lens. What we're actually doing, though, by adding some extra plus in that lens is inducing some peripheral myopia, or at least reducing some peripheral hyperopia. So even if the child isn't using that anti-fatigue aspect of the lens to do their reading, the thought is that extra plus power may be similarly to with orthokeratology or distance center multifocal lenses, inducing some peripheral myopia on the peripheral retina and slowing myopic progression that way. And there's some evidence supporting that mechanism in the literature, a lot of the early studies evaluated lag of accommodation and treating, quote unquote, lag of accommodation to slow myopia control, slow myopia progression. And what they've sort of discovered is that's probably not the mechanism. It's not that you are lowering their, treating their lag of accommodation. It's actually more likely that you are inducing some peripheral myopia. So I think it's critical to add some sort of optical spectacle intervention on top of your atropine patients because they need to be wearing glasses anyway.
Dr. O'Connor, when do you start talking to your patients about myopia control? Are you like as soon as they come into your chair and they're a minus one and a new patient, you mention it, or do you wait till you see a big jump in progression? What's your thoughts?
Absolutely. Every patient. So at the very least, someone who is just starting to get into the myopia control scene, I would say having that conversation, the more you can talk to patients and families, the better and more comfortable you're going to be feeling about discussing it. So the first time that a patient comes in and they are myopic, a patient whose mother or father that I see who's highly myopic, I'm going to discuss myopia control, even if it's only 30 seconds or 60 seconds, where I say, we're minus 50 today, we're going to prescribe some glasses, I want to see you in 6 months, there's a chance that that prescription will go up. The great news is we have some ways to slow that process down nowadays, planting that seed. The biggest mistake that you can make is to wait until an arbitrary cutoff, say minus 6 or minus 3 or minus whatever it is. There's no need to wait for a certain prescription before you begin managing myopia, because we know very clearly from research that any myopia is a risk factor for ocular disease, retinal detachment, posterior subcapsular cataract, myopic maculopathy, glaucoma. It's not just higher levels. Your risk increases at higher levels, but you have an increased risk starting at minus 1, minus 2, minus 3. So anyone who is coming in the first time getting a myopic prescription, anyone who has progressed minus 50, and even if they progress minus a quarter, I don't know for sure they won't progress more next year. So I will at least, again, plant that seed, make sure that they know that we may be pursuing some form of myopia management in the future.
When you're having those discussions with parents in the chair, do you have paperwork prepared that explains more of the myopia control options outside of the package, of course, that you're going to present as far as the charges and fees associated with your office? Or do you direct them to a website to read more? And what's your thoughts on that part?
That's a great question. So we do things probably a little bit different than some other folks who manage myopia. Our office is very much set up to maximize the number of people who pursue myopia management. And one of the ways that we have found that we can do that is by making the process as simple as possible. So rather than setting up a consultation visit and sort of dragging the process out and giving the patient a stack of papers to go home and read and look over and get confused on, I just take the time in the exam room as I'm talking about the health of the eye, about the prescription, to discuss myopia management right there. And if the patient and the family is amenable, we'll go ahead and pursue one of our treatment options right then and there. Now, not every patient is going to be ready every time you have that conversation to go ahead and proceed. So in those cases, we will direct them to some material they can find online, potentially setting up a consultation visit if desired. But I think the more comfortable you get with this conversation, you'd be very surprised the number of patients and families who are ready to sort of pull the trigger right there in the exam room right here and now. So making the process as simple as possible is a great idea. One other thing I'll mention is for folks who are just wanting to get started and say, I just don't know how to even broach the subject with parents, there's a great website that Kate Gifford in Australia has put together called mykidsvision.org. It's basically a little quiz. I think it's about 7 questions that you can run through in the exam room with the patient and their family. And it talks about their risk for progressing in myopia. It gives them basically a high, medium, or low risk. And then as the parents see that, it's also got some links to some evidence-based articles about how we know that. What are we pulling from? So
you are such an expert on this topic. And just conversing with you, you know, just kind of mesmerizing how much knowledge you have and capability you have to discuss this in an exam room. Where did you get all of your background knowledge on this? Are there conferences that you recommend for doctors who want to learn more?
I appreciate you saying that. So I think that the beauty of myopia management is that we are all already experts on myopia. So it's not like you're starting from scratch, where if you've never fit a scleral contact lens before, it's a whole new ball game. The fitting process, everything's different. You're starting here from a base of something that you are already extremely comfortable talking about all day, every day. So it's really more a matter of just changing the way that you think about myopia. And again, having that conversation more and more and more with patients. So, this is something that's sort of a clinical interest to me. And I don't know that everybody will be as passionate about myopia management as I am. But, you know, I spend some time looking at the newest research. And again, like I mentioned, there's a lot of great meta-analyses, which prevents you from necessarily having to dive into every article that's ever been written on progressive myopia. But oftentimes, we hear this treatment works, this treatment doesn't, this is a comorbidity of myopia, this is the prevalence of myopia. And many of us don't bother to actually jump in and take a look and say, well, where's that statistic coming from? Where's that number coming from? How much can we actually slow myopia? Can we slow it 100%? Is it meaningful to slow it 20%? So, you know, looking at the newest research, maybe checking out a myopia CE next time you're at a conference. It's really, again, it's something you're pulling from a knowledge base on which you're already an expert. So I really don't think it takes years and years and years to become an expert on this topic, because, you know, we've all already got that level of knowledge on it. It's just a matter of expanding your horizon.
Well, you were just recently at the Global Lens Symposium. Was there any takeaway from that conference that you feel like, oh, gearing up for 2018, something new on the horizon?
Yeah, I think probably the most exciting thing that I took away from GSLS is that there are some studies that are currently underway that will be coming out about combination therapies. So I think it's intuitive to most of us who manage myopia that adding a pharmacological intervention, so low-dose atropine with an optical intervention, say orthokeratology, it makes sense that those things would have some degree of an additive effect, but we don't really have strong evidence of that at this point. So if a patient's going to be spending $800 a year on low-dose atropine and, you know, $1,200 a year on orthokeratology, we want to be able to actually say that's going to have an increased effect before we have the patient spending $2,000. So those studies are underway, and I'm excited to see some of those results in that capacity. And then I'm also kind of excited to see some more data in terms of spectacle lenses controlling myopia, because for quite a while we've kind of viewed it as, well, yes, progressives, bifocals can slow myopia progression, statistically significant, but it's usually not clinically significant, you know, somewhere in the 20-25% range. But that 2014 or 2015 study that came out that was well designed over 3 years that showed about a 50% reduction in progression, that, you know, that may allow us to expand our horizons in terms of how we can treat maybe patients who aren't interested in using an eye drop and who have no interest in contact lenses.
I want to talk something a little bit more on a personal note. You know, I went to a lecture that you gave or a dinner meeting and super impressed by you right away learning this topic. And that's why I reached out about wanting to do this podcast. But you're a 2016 grad. You're a new doc. Many times young ODs will reach out to us like, how do I break in to working with industry, to being a thought leader on a topic? So what was your path to success and getting out there so early in your career?
So I'd say just be proactive. So for example, when I first started, you know, making a decision that I wanted to pursue myopia management, I knew that at our practice, being a very heavy one-day contact lens practice, that if we were going to incorporate distance center multifocals, we were going to need to use a one-day contact lens. And I actually discovered on ODs on Facebook, of all places, that there was a distance center one-day multifocal contact lens on the market. Long story short, I reached out to that company. I got a fitting set, began using it, had some success with both fitting myopes and fitting presbyopes. And time went on, I have had a couple of opportunities to speak for them and talk about their contact lens. It's just sort of goes to show that kind of keeping your eye to the pavement and staying up to date on the newest advances, the newest products, the newest therapies, you know, can sort of be an area to get your foot in the door in terms of talking to other docs, talking for industry partners. You know, obviously being a 2016 grad, like you said, I don't have all the answers. And I always like to tell folks that when I have a chance to speak to them, but this is something that I'm passionate about. And again, I don't think it's something that takes 10 years to become, you know, an expert on. So my whole goal is to show people that myopia management is something that can be very simple. It can be very rewarding, and it's definitely something that's going to be effective and very important for our patients.
Well, hopefully this has inspired a lot of people. I tell, you know, just doing your job as an optometrist, a lot of times you're passionate about it, you found something you were passionate about, and you fit the lenses. And that's really kind of all it took to break into being able to share your passion with others. Thank you so much for your time today. If anyone's listening and they want to reach out to you to learn more about what you're doing in myopia control, or maybe even go to a dinner lecture that you're giving, what's a good way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so the best way to get in touch with me would be through my email address, which is O'Connor@YourEyeSolution.com. So O-C-O-N-N-O-R at YourEyeSolution without an S.com.
Thank you so much again for your time today, Dr. O'Connor. And if you guys weren't doing it before, get out there and let's control some myopia. Let's slow some things down for people. It's something we can start bright and early Monday morning every single day of the week.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.